Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, North Miami Beach native Dr. Robert Yonover has saved lives with one simple invention. He created an inflatable raft that lights up the sky that helps people stranded at sea or in the wilderness. Well, now he's working on saving people in a different way. He's written a book to help those who are caregivers. It's called The Caregiver Survival Guide, and it's out July 17th. He was a caretaker for his wife, who years ago was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Dr. Yonover joins us now in studio. Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. My pleasure. It's an honor to be here.
You know what? The first half of your life, you've lived this amazing life. You were a family man. You have a doctorate. You've traveled a lot. You studied volcanoes. Right. You're an inventor. You were a caretaker.
Right.
You're an author. I mean, when you look at your life now, what do you think about?
I just think about the whole journey of trying to take whatever comes upon you and deal with it and go hard on whatever it is and not hesitate. And when you get knocked down, you keep getting up. You can't quit on anything.
Let's talk about, I want to start talking about your book that's coming out. Sure. And again, the full title, I mean, it's the Caregiver's Survival Guide, Caring for Yourself While Caring for a Loved One. Your wife was diagnosed with MS more than 20 years ago.
That's right. And our kids were 7 and 4 years old. And she slowly went from a limp to a walker to a wheelchair within a year, and then was in a wheelchair for 19 years. So we had to deal with that and not get too frustrated.
You know, and this one, as I was telling you before the program, I mean, going through your book, this one hits for me personally because my mom had to become the caregiver for her parents.
Right.
Her mom had Alzheimer's. And going through your book, I mean, it's like, oh my gosh, these were conversations I was having with my mom, and like, people have gone through this. Hasn't somebody written about it? Because there's so many things that come up, and it would have been good to know.
Exactly. I think the reason I did write it was first cathartically just to record my thoughts. And as a scientist, I'd like to help and analyze situations. And it just seemed obvious that no one was breaking it down the way I thought about it. I thought about solving problems the most efficiently way possible and ultimately saving people and helping people. And I knew it helped me, so.
You spell out so beautifully in the book this process, and it starts with a diagnosis.
Right.
You get the news. What can you say to people about those first days and weeks after you get the news from a doctor, whether it's MS or anything else?
Right.
You know what's coming next. But I mean, for you, those first days and weeks and months even, what was that like for you and the family, and that message you want to pass to people and how to prepare?
Well, okay, initially just breathe, just kind of relax and take stock of the whole situation. And then I like to rationalize with how it could be worse. And our initial reaction was, at least it's not our kids. You know, we had this perfect life and we were 36 years old. We had done everything already. So it was horrible what was coming, but we knew we had accomplished everything. We had both been overachievers and had this just romantic, perfect life. And now we're going into a different phase and our kids were healthy. And that was the whole emphasis for us, was to keep them going.
You, all of a sudden, you have to become this caregiver.
Right.
I mean, look, you have a profession, and you were a volcanologist. You were studying volcanoes.
Right.
You had this, and both you, as you know, as you had pointed out, both you and your wife, very active, athletic people.
Yeah, it was tough to be like a macho guy to all of a sudden be a nurse, basically. And that was a challenge. But I fortunately came from a very feministic world, and I learned a lot of those skills. So it wasn't that hard. And again, it's a survival skill. It's all inside of us. You just have to tap it and want to tap it and have your eyes on the prize, which is finishing and just surviving. And you know, to borrow the AA term, a day at a time. I mean, that's the way it is. And each thing you get knocked down on, you have to get through it. And then even like pregnancy or babies crying all night, you just have to laugh through some of the hard times because it gets ridiculously hard. But it's just life, you know, you just have to keep going.
I thought one of the things that hit me, and this is, I guess, part of any process, whatever the disease may be, is how some people in the family go through denial.
Right.
But then they're also looking for anything to grasp onto.
That's right.
For help. And so your wife was going through this process where all of a sudden she's looking for healers.
That's right.
And anything that...
And that was the most frustrating for me as a scientist, to be chasing rainbows. And, you know, you cannot deny the person that's sick the ability to find a rainbow. So we chased rainbows all over the world for, you know, some great, at great expense and great hardship, but it was worth the journey because she had to go through all of that to realize and accept it. You know, there's the denial and acceptance of all this, but you can't give up. And I didn't fault her for chasing those far-fetched cures, if you will, but it was hard.
I can only imagine, you know, that marriage is already challenging enough as it is. And then this just adds a whole nother layer of stress on top of that. I mean, you know, how would you tell people, again, if they find themselves in a situation, how to prepare for that part of it so that you're not torn apart and the family itself isn't torn apart?
Right. I think you have to go back to your basics of how did you get together in the first place? What's your relationship like? And what do you value? And you have to keep that intimacy level up. I mean, that's why when we laugh through some of these hard times or just went back to our foundation of, you know, being madly in love, that's what got us through. And then looking at the product of that love, which is beautiful kids. And they're perfect, you know, when they're little babies, they're perfect. And we have to keep perpetuating that so they can survive this and not kind of shield them from some of the bad stuff, yet also expose it to them. We normalize a lot of the things. So the wheelchair became like a toy for the kids to ride in. You know, we didn't hide it from them too much. We just embraced it. And if people couldn't handle it, that was their problem, not our problem.
So, you know, I mean, going through a couple of things I want to ask about is, first of all, you point out that like many other diseases that with MS, you knew that it was going to be a gradual thing, that it wasn't just from one day to the next, all of a sudden your wife's in a wheelchair, from one day to the next, this happens. It happened little by little, and that made it easier for you.
Absolutely. It was more like pregnancy. If you got pregnant and had the baby within a minute, that would be a bummer. That would be really hard. But this way, we had a year or two. Within a year, she went from, again, limping while training for a marathon to a cane to a walker to a wheelchair. And then even, so that's only year one or two. And then for 19 years, she perpetuated her life. She was able to live that long. We knew the end was coming, but we kept fighting the end and just knowing that just to embrace what you have now. And even as it got worse, it was a slow motion ending, a 19 year thing. So we got to be together longer and we got to prepare for, as each step got worse, her walking got non-existent or her speaking got lower, her voice got weaker. We just kept adapting, but it kept happening slower. So in many ways, that was a blessing. And also, she never lost her ability to think. And, you know, I feel for the Alzheimer's people where you lose that person. That's not even the same person anymore. And it's a horrible choice, but I'd rather have someone lose their ability to walk than their ability to think. And it's not that we had a choice.
You had a whole section in the book about really, and it really goes back to the theme of the book, I think, which is taking care of yourself.
Right. You have to be selfish a little.
As you are taking care of somebody else. And I loved it because you had talked about how you'd get away. You'd go paddleboard. You'd go for long drives.
I got my surf. I got mine first. And it sounds selfish, but I had to get mine first. I had to get my hour in the ocean or get my break, my mental break or my work break to be able to be there and present and capable of taking care of her. So I always, even people that don't have illnesses, always get a piece of recreation for mental health.
And what do you tell people so that they don't feel guilty? Like, hey, listen, every now and then you got to step away and treat yourself.
Right, exactly.
Do something and get away from everybody and the whole situation.
Absolutely.
But how do you help somebody deal with the guilt? Like, oh, I can't leave them.
Well, it's 24/7 though. Even if you have an hour a day, that might help your whole perspective. So I always had at least an hour a day. And even when you get to advanced stages where you have to hire some help, be strategic in that help. You don't hire someone to hang out and watch a movie with her. You hire someone to do some of the harder things that coincide with a good time for you to take your break. So you just have to be strategic.
You talk about hiring somebody.
Yeah,
and so this is one of the things too, is you have to find people who can help. And sometimes you have to hire a professional. This leads to finances. You have a whole section on this.
Exactly. And we had 180 caregivers through our house over the 19 years, if you can believe that. So our house became like Grand Central. We'd hire someone and sometimes they'd even make it through the day. They just quit immediately because it was hard. Cindy was tough and strong-willed and demanding, and I had to kind of be the backup. But also you look at someone making a good salary and then all of a sudden costing a salary to live her life. So it was a huge financial turnaround. It's a financial It's just a death sentence.
Yeah. What did you learn about the cost in it's not just the cost, the emotional and physical cost on you
right.
now becoming this caretaker, but the financial
right.
cost.
Well, exactly. Think about $50,000 or $100,000 earner that all of a sudden needs $100,000 in money. So that's a $200,000 turnaround. So how do you produce that money? And also, again, mental health. How do you not do everything? You want to do it all yourself to save money, but at what cost? You're going to lose yourself and your own sanity. So you have to, my advice is to try to just be smart with your money. And again, buy the best hours you can of that critical help of the hours you need most for your break and the hardest for you. And for Cindy, the hardest was maybe the preparing her for bed or for her morning shower and eating. So that took a long time. And I did it a lot, but it was good to have a break for that. Whereas when she was up and ready and listening to radio or watching TV or whatever it is, I could work beside her. And that way I didn't have to hire someone during those hours when we could work together.
What do you think are some of the bigger mistakes that people make, and things that you yeah. did that you go back, if I knew this then?
Right. I think people think of short term, just all in life. I mean, everything takes twice as much money and twice as much time, any idea you're working on. And it's the same thing. If you think, well, she has MS, she'll be fine in a year, or on the doomsday side, well, this is only going to last a couple of years. I kept thinking this might be 30 years long, and that's what I was hoping. We made it 19, which was miraculous. The kids that are 7 and 4 years old became 26 and 23, so we made it from little kids to adult children, so that was great. But I think people think too in the short term too much, and they don't think the long term. I think that would be my best advice for that.
Of course, one of the tougher topics is death.
Yes.
When do you start talking about that? How do you bring it up?
Well, the thing for my kids early on, I'm very blunt. I used to tell the kids straight away, your mom's dying. You need to hang out with her more. And if you have anything to work out with her, it's now. And especially my daughter and my wife had some troubles, and they kind of weren't on the same page for a year or two. And then I was able to bring them back together and have like 4 or 5 good years of them working together, hanging out together. And that was the most critical for me, because I've seen too many people lose someone, whether it's just your parents, and not have cleared the air on certain issues. And that's so important, because once they're gone, they're gone. And I used to tell Cindy, she used to want to check out sometimes. I said, no, you need to be here. You need to help me. I need a co-parent. And even if you nod at the kids, they still have a mother. If you're just smiling at them, that's still a presence. I used to tell her, I don't care if you can't move at all. You still can wink and smile at the kids. I mean, and we also would treat her, we tried to normalize her situation. So I used to tell her, she's Cleopatra. Okay, you can't move your arms or legs, but you're bathed and I hand feed you grapes and we read to you. It's still, you have to just switch the mindset.
You started writing this book. I mean, it's coming out this month, but you started writing this book years ago.
Right. About 7 years ago, I started writing it. I just knew, as a scientist, you take notes on what you're doing. And I knew this was valuable because, first of all, as a scientist and inventor, and also as a guy, not many guys are caregivers. In fact, the publisher went for a photo for the cover. They couldn't find a good picture of a man pushing a woman on a wheelchair. Ultimately, they gave up. So the cover doesn't even have a picture. It has artwork. And then after she passed away, I wrote the last 20-30%, and that was hard, but it was nice closure for me. And it was more, my English isn't so great with past. It was hard to write about, oh yeah, she's in the other room, or then to be writing that she's gone. It was hard that way. But
again, talking with Dr. Robert Yonover, he is the author of the book, The Caregiver Survival Guide, Caring for Yourself While Caring for a Loved One. His late wife was diagnosed with MS years ago, and he became her caregiver, her caretaker, all the way to the end. As he said, 19 years
right.
they were able to last. He was also, by the way, an inventor. He, if you recognize the name, maybe if you watch the show Shark Tank, you saw him, because he was on that show. He had invented this thing called the Sea Rescue Streamer. And, you could see, by the way, a video. We have that up on our social media, I believe. Look up WLRN Sundial on Facebook or Twitter. And it's this device, just a simple device, that he actually brought one, and you could just carry it in your pocket. It's so small. But it was a device that was turned down by the investors of that television show. But he's gone on to develop this, and it has saved lives. You know what, Dr. Yonover, I want to ask you about this, because during this whole process, you're taking care of your wife, keeping the family together. This is, again, anybody who's been a caregiver or knows someone who has, it takes up so much of your life. It's amazing that you were working on this all the while as you're doing this. Where did the idea even come from? Well, and by the way, let's start with this. Describe it, because I gave a very brief description.
When you're lost at sea or in the woods, your head's the size of a coconut or a rock. If you fly over a coconut or a rock in the water or land, you don't see it. And people that live through this say the same thing. You flew right over me. Why didn't you see me? And then back in 85, I flew back here and I saw Christo wrap the islands in Biscayne Bay in pink. And I knew that that's what I needed, a little piece of pink plastic. The Navy thought that wasn't macho enough, so they said, lose the pink. So it became an orange, a long orange tail. I put struts on it, so it's segmented like a centipede, and got patents, military approvals. Now it's used all over the world. It's a very simple device. It's almost too simple. A lot of people are insulted by its simplicity, but the best ideas are the simplest. They go for the strongest patents.
And it took years to develop this.
Absolutely, years.
And it looks so simple. It is such a simple thing.
But again, you have to break people's mindsets. You know, smoke signals, flares, sea dye marker all wash away. The streamer, the Navy called it the only continuous and passive signaling device. Once you put it out there, it's working forever, and you can pull it back in and hide it.
The best way I could describe it when I'm looking at the video, I mean, you see this image in the video of this guy out in the water. And as you said, from a distance, you can't really see.
Right.
And yet here's this large, long orange streamer that's just floating behind him. And from a distance, you can see that.
Exactly. And then we have a fighter pilot version that pops out automatically when it hits the water and flashes. It's on F-16 ejection seats. It's really the most expensive plane in the world is the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. It's worth $500 million. It has a $100 piece of plastic on it.
You grew up around water. I mean, as I said, you're from Florida.
I'm from North Miami Beach, and I went to school at NMB, and I went to Florida State for a bachelor's and master's, and I went to Hawaii and got my PhD. I worked on submarine volcanoes off Galapagos, went down in the Alvin submersible 2 miles deep, worked at NASA and MIT on my samples. And all that was happening is when I invented the streamer. So I'm kind of used to multitasking.
I'm just thinking, because you grew up around water, why do you think it's taken so long for somebody to come up with an idea like this?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. But I think what's happening now, and I have to put a negative plug in, kids are staring at their little TVs in their pockets all day, those smartphones, and they're not thinking. And I like to think with everything on the line. So when I go surfing big waves or out boating, I think about, what do I have at hand? It's kind of like MacGyver. What problem can you solve with the most minimal amount of materials? And I think when you're looking at color screens all day, you lose that ability to reason and survival, quick thinking, desperate thinking.
All right. So as I mentioned, you were on Shark Tank.
Yes.
And this is the show where people, they come onto the program, and here's this group of investors. Like, one of them is Mark Cuban,
the
owner of the Mavericks, the Dallas Mavericks. And you pitch your idea, and then one of them, if they like it, will say, you know what, I'm going to invest in
you.
And then, of course, they're going to invest and help you to extend. You told me something interesting is that, I knew this, is that you don't just show up with an idea. You have to have something you've already developed.
So when I got on there and showed them the idea, I had Mr. Wonderful unfurl the streamer down the hallway, and that was cool. And they all liked it as an idea. They thought it was a cool project, maybe a cool high school idea, college idea. And they said, you got any sales? I said, yeah, we have $15 million in sales. And their heads almost flew off because we had, you know, the patents and the military approvals, it was adopted all over the world and by our military. It saved 4 lives already. I met a guy, one of the guys that saved his life. He thanked me, which is one of the great things. So we had all this credibility. They loved the idea, but they didn't see the value in their money-centric world of how quickly they could turn more money from.
All right. I mean, not to take you back to that moment. This is a part of your pitch on that show.
Okay.
Every other device, smoke, flare, sea dye, it all runs away. Lasts seconds or minutes. It's the only continuous signaling device. This has saved 4 lives already, and I need your help to save 4,000 more. And one of the guys I saved thanked me, and that was better than any money that I've made from this already.
I thought was interesting was that, afterwards, again, they turn you down, and I didn't see that episode. This is going back last year. I didn't see that episode. but there was some incredible response on Twitter. These are some of the things people are saying. I'm still mad about the Sea Rescue streamer. I really think that would have been a great investment. What? The Booty Queen nonsense got a deal, but Lifesaver Sea Rescue streamer didn't? Disappointed that the sharks all passed on that Sea Rescue thing. That was genius. I want one for my emergency evacuation kit. So, I mean, you get a lot of response. Still, though, look, you've had success because, again, the military has been a great customer.
Absolutely.
And it got attention for you.
Yeah, and those Shark Tank, you know, at first, I'm a competitive guy. I wanted the money. Of course, I wanted the team with Mark Cuban, and Mark Cuban loved it. They all loved it, which was great. So on national TV, 7 minutes of 9 million people saw these five sharks say what a great device this is going to save lives. That's golden. And they keep rerunning it on CNBC. So every time it runs, our Amazon spikes. The bottom line, and they were partially correct, people don't care about safety. The average person, that's why the military is a better customer. They have to care about safety. Joe Boder and Josephine Hiker, they don't care. They'd rather buy a six-pack.
But then you think, because you know, you grew up in Florida. I mean, there's a lot of boating out here.
Absolutely.
And so it's something that would be extremely useful. You know, coming back, your book's coming out soon. And I just, I can see how it can help, so, you know, especially in Florida, it can help so many people. But really, where do you see your life going now? Where does it go from this point forward? I mean, because you're the adventurer, but as you said, you're also the scientist. So it's always about solving an equation, solving a problem. What is that challenge for you now?
Okay, I have a couple of big projects. I'm never giving up, of course. That's the key. I'm going to invent till I die. I've got another book coming out. It just got accepted, Hardcore Health, which has to do with, as a caregiver, again, I couldn't afford to get sick. So I'm on a severe regimen, physical, mental, social, to perpetuate my life. And I'm an old guy now, and my father's 93. I'm going to be 60 in a year. And I'm still surfing 20, 30 foot face waves on the North Shore. I also have another new invention that I hope to get on Shark Tank, which is a water bicycle. I've invented this thing that you won't believe no one's thought of it, but I work in biomimicry. I'm no genius. I look at nature and see how nature solved the problem. Why would someone make a bicycle that spins a propeller? There's no propeller fish. It should be a fin. So I just got the patent for a reciprocating fin on the back of a bicycle or kayak, mounted on pontoons. So I'm working on that now. The bummer with that is it can't fit in your pocket. So the storage will be tough.
Listen, if you're surfing 30-foot walls in Hawaii, you're not old. You're not old. So,
thank you.
Dr. Robert Yonover, again, inventor of the Sea Rescue streamer. Again, we have a video up on our social media, so you can check that out. If you haven't seen it, again, he was on Shark Tank, the show, so you probably recognize him from there. But he's also the author of a book coming out this month called Caregiver Survival Guide, Caring for Yourself While Caring for a Loved One. Dr. Yonover, it's been a pleasure, man.
Thanks.
Thank you so
me
much.
Too.